Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Gregory Melville and Susan Fox and Kathleen Bromage.
From Connecticut Public Radio in Hartford, this is Audacious. I'm Kyone Wolf. You know who loves to ponder the power of lightning? Mark Twain. Here's one of his many quotes about it. Thunder is good. Thunder is impressive. But it's lightning that does the work. As per Twain, lightning is such a mysterious, exciting, inspiring, powerful presence. But for some of us, like two of the guests that you'll meet today, lightning can be life-changing. For Shauna Turner, getting struck changed her body, her relationships, and even her personality. And for Tony Tacoria, his near-death experience after getting hit led him to become a piano virtuoso. He wrote an entire composition about what it felt like to be hit and what it felt like to be dead. But there is no one in the world who knows more about what happens when someone is hit by lightning than Dr. Marianne Cooper. She's an emergency physician and an international expert in lightning injuries and lightning injury prevention. And she's the co-author of the book, Reducing Lightning Injuries Worldwide. Now, because a person getting struck by lightning is such a rare occurrence, there's still so much we don't know about it and how it affects the body. So I asked Dr. Cooper to parse that out.
It turns out nothing attracts lightning. Nothing attracts lightning. It doesn't matter whether you have a red shirt on, whether you're talking on a cell phone, whether you are standing on a metal plate. Nothing attracts lightning. Now, in science, we try to explain nature. We don't write the rules for it. And we can't write the rules for lightning. But we can say, and we know from studies, that lightning is more likely to hit something that's tall, something that's isolated, or something that's pointy. Now, the only two factors that apply to people are if you're the tallest thing in an area, and if you're isolated, then you're more likely to be hit by lightning. Or if you're standing next to something that's tall, like a tree. And that's why we tell people not to stand under trees.
Any other don'ts, do's when there's a lightning storm?
You know, we've been talking for years about this simple little motto that even three-year-olds can understand. And if you can't quote it, that's okay, as long as you follow it. And that's, when thunder roars, go indoors. We found that listing a whole lot of don'ts doesn't help anyone. It doesn't tell you what you should do. So we've tried to change all of our mottos into do statements. When thunder roars, go indoors. No place outside is safe when a thunderstorm is in the area. Wait inside for 30 minutes till the last time you hear or see thunder or lightning, and then it's safe to go outside. So 30 minutes since thunder roars, now it's safe to go outdoors. Okay? Know what the forecast is going to be in your area. Be willing to change your plans if thunderstorms are scheduled for that afternoon. You wouldn't go to a soccer game if there was going to be a huge storm of some kind. Well, change your other activities too. Be wise. Know where your shelter, where your safe areas are, and allow enough time to evacuate to get to them if you are outside. So for instance, if your kids are playing soccer, parents should always have their eye to the sky and see if they're seeing lightning or hearing thunder. And if they are, they get the kids off the fields and into all of the mommy vans and vehicles that are surrounding the sports field.
What about if you're driving? Is it okay to stay in your car? Are you safe there?
There are two safe places to be when there's a thunderstorm in the area. One is inside a substantial building. That means one that you could live in, like a house or a school or a church or something like that. No. Another is your all-metal vehicle. Lightning's made up of electrons. They all want to stay as far away from each other as possible, just like the two positive sides of a magnet will push each other away. Same thing. Electrons want to be away from you. So they will be on the outside of that metal vehicle. It has nothing to do with rubber tires.
What kind of injuries do you see from lightning strikes, and why are they different?
You know, about 90% of people who are injured by lightning survive. Less than a third of them have any marks on their skin at all. The reason for that is that lightning injures by many mechanisms, not just by coming out of the sky and grabbing you. It also can hit a tree that you're standing next to and then splash across to you from this tree. That's a side splash. It can go into the ground and then spread out across the ground. And if you happen to be in the area, it's called ground current because it's coming for the ground. It can get you. But by then, it's been weakened so much that it may cause death or injury, but it probably won't cause burns. There's another way too, and there's two more ways. One is contact. If you're inside your house and you reach for the plumbing, lightning hits close to the house, comes in through the plumbing, you can get hit, injured that way. Now, the fifth way you can be injured by lightning is upward streamer. When you have a thundercloud coming across the area, it has an intense electrical charge, so it induces an opposite charge in everything underneath it. And that can actually cause charges to stream up through whatever is underneath it, whether it's a tree, a telephone tower, or you. Well, that upward streamer that's coming up through you, even if it doesn't connect with the downward lightning, is still enough that when the charge collapses, you can be injured or killed.
Okay, so what are some of the injuries? You mentioned burning. Like, when I picture it, I imagine like a heart attack. What happens in the body? And I know that you've seen one lightning strike victim. But what comes to mind?
The only cause of death from lightning is cardiac arrest at the time of the injury. Now, the person may be resuscitated in the ICU for 3 days before they pronounce them dead, but the proximate cause was at the time of the strike, okay? Now, we don't know what causes that cardiac arrest. There's many different parts of the electrical system in the body that could be affected that cause it, but we do know that cardiac arrest is the only cause of death. Burns are usually superficial. They're usually quite minor. They're usually not anything to be of concern about. They will heal the vast majority of the time. There's rare exceptions, but most of the time. So burns are not the real injury. The injury is to the nervous system, the electrical system of the body. So we see brain injury, similar to the football players and those post-concussion times.
CTE.
Yeah. So brain injury. And then the other part of the nervous system is that gives you pain. When a nerve is injured and then heals, it often heals more irritably and it sends a lot of false signals to the brain. And all of those signals to the brain goes, that nerve goes to my hand. It must be my hand that's hurting. So chronic pain is one of the problems that we see. Brain injury with a lack of ability to learn new things, organize, do the executive function, to pull the data back out of your brain when you need it because of the brain injury is very common. It's hard for people to understand the brain injury because they don't see it. You get hit by a truck, people can see your broken leg, but they can't see the brain injury. Adults who have this injury may not be able to return to their prior area of work because their executive function is gone. Kids will have learning disabilities and not be able to learn.
Can we talk about some stats? Is it true that men are struck roughly 4 times as often as women? Is that because they don't heed your warning and go outside? Like, why is that true?
You know, we've often wondered why in developed countries, roughly 4 times as many men die as women.
Well, wait a minute. Just so I'm clear, the quote was men are struck roughly 4 times as often as women, but you just said men die roughly 4 times more than women. So just so we're clear.
Okay. We can't say 4 times more men are struck by lightning because we really don't know. We do know that from the death statistics, which is what we follow, that 4 times more men die from lightning than women in developed countries. In developing countries, which makes up about 2/3 of the world at least, we are now seeing in some populations that more women are killed than men. For instance, in Bangladesh, the only time people are killed is during the monsoon season. The only time is basically when they're doing their farming. They're doing the rice paddies and things like that. They're out in the open, and it's during the monsoon time when there's a lot of lightning and there's no safe places to go. And the women are working as hard as the men out in the rice paddies.
Okay, so just so I'm clear, if I am out at a soccer game and a storm rolls in and I got to get out of there, what do I do? Where should I go?
You know, a wonderful friend of mine and longtime lightning safety colleague says, by the time you're out in a situation like that, you've already made too many bad decisions. And I can't tell you whether standing under the telephone lines or close to the telephone pole or away from the telephone lines or anything else is going to help you. When thunder roars, go indoors, period. End of story. No place outside is safe when thunderstorms are in the area. No place. You give up your safety from lightning when you go to a fishing camp in Canada, or when you're out in the middle of a field in Montana riding a horse or camping. You wouldn't walk down to the bottom of the Grand Canyon without adequate water. You pre-plan. Well, if you're out in the wilderness, you may have to give up some of your safety. You give up your 3 to 5 minute EMS response time that you might have in the city. You can plan as best you can, but there are just some risks you can't plan around. One of them may be lightning.
Well, Dr. Marianne Cooper, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
When we get back, how's life different for Shauna Turner after getting hit by lightning?
I'm very flatline now. I don't show a lot of emotion. Once you've been struck by lightning, you're never the same person. You're a completely different person. You'll never be the same.
Then meet a man who had a near-death experience when he got hit and made it his mission to learn the piano so he could compose a piece of music, which you're hearing right now, that expresses what it felt like when he was on the other side.
The only thing that you could feel was pure positive love. This energy is actually running through everything and makes up everything.
I'm Kyone Wolf. This is Audacious. Stay with me.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford Healthcare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford Healthcare. ECMO is a leading-edge, life-saving treatment for patients with cardiac or respiratory failure. Dr. Jason Gluck, director of the Mechanical Circulatory Support Program and Emergency Cardiac Care at Hartford Hospital, explains what it is.
So ECMO stands for extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, outside the body oxygenation of blood. It's a life support technique that's used by highly sophisticated medical systems for patients with severe heart or lung failure. The technique involves removing blood from the body, oxygenating it, and then returning it back.
ECMO procedures happen in the ICU, but not all hospitals are equipped with the necessary technology and staff. Dr. Gluck describes Hartford Hospital's ECMO Go team.
So ECMO is considered when treatments have failed, and in our center, with a special ECMO on the go team, we'll actually take that technology to their hospital and help them out there if they need to stabilize the patient and then bring them back to heart for recovery.
For more information, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
This is Audacious. I'm Kyone Wolf. Globally, 2,000 people are killed annually by lightning. But according to the CDC, almost 90% of all lightning strike victims survive. We'll be talking with two survivors about how their lives were irrevocably changed by being struck. You'll meet a man whose lightning strike experience led him to become obsessed with classical music and the piano. But first, meet Shauna Turner. She's a high school special education teacher in North Carolina. One day she was overseeing a soccer game. A storm rolled in and she was sopping wet.
And that's when the lightning bolt hit the transformer. It was about 30 feet from where I was. I was actually standing in a little ticket booth, and I was leaning on the metal door frame of the building. I was soaking wet, and when that hit, the lightning traveled into the building that I was in, and it threw me to the ground. At that point, I was told later that I did yell, I don't usually use those words, so
I feel like if there's any time in which it is acceptable for you to be using profanity, it's when you're hit by lightning. Yeah?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Absolutely. However, the funny part of that whole story was, being that I never used profanity before, I do now, but being that I never used it before, instead of worrying about myself being hit by lightning, I was worried I was going to get in trouble because I had said a bad word at school. So everything was off after that. The gentlemen that were around me, they picked me up after, you know, the initial shock of nobody really understood what had happened. But they picked me up and I told them my left arm is what was leaning on the door frame, and it felt like boiling jello. It was just like it was moving all in my arm. You know, they kept asking, what do you need? I'm like, I don't know. You know, my shoulder's hurting, my feet are tingling. To those statements, I added my chest hurt. And they kept that, you know, what do you need? What do you need? I don't know. I just wasn't very clear. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what had happened. I wasn't really sure, you know, what I needed. My son was there and he's 15, or was at the time. You know, he, of course, being a typical teenager, he wasn't much helping on any of this. They did finally call the game and they said, you know, we're not going to have anything going on. Game's over. And they sent me home. There was no ambulance called.
Do you wish, looking back, that you had gone right to the hospital?
I do wish I had, because the drive home was extremely terrifying. I think it has caused a lot of issues just in everything, because my whole body started to shut down on the drive home. Everything started tightening up. You know, I started getting more unclear. I was, you know, I didn't know how to drive to the hospital. I don't know how I got home. I do remember asking my son, if I can't drive anymore, can you take over? He didn't know how to drive at that point, and he said he would try. But, you know, it was just me. I'm not married, so I didn't know at that point, you know, what to do other than just try to make it home.
So then what happened when you got home?
Once I got home, I was dating a gentleman, and he had been called on the way home to let him know what was going on, and he rushed me immediately to the hospital. Once I got into the hospital, he dropped me off at the front door. I don't know what I looked like, but the security guard asked me, his exact words were, what happened to you? I told him, he grabbed my arm and he just immediately pulled me into the back. It was just a mass of doctors and nurses and everybody moving around and hooking me up to all kinds of different, things. And, you know, the EKG was off and, you know, my blood pressure was extremely high at that point. And I was confused. I was a little hurt from where I had fallen, but nothing major. Them not understanding what to do, me not understanding how to explain what really happened, you know, just a lot of confusion all the way around. They observed me overnight and released me in the morning. And they said I'd be okay.
What are some of the physical and mental symptoms you started experiencing in the weeks after the strike?
Within probably the first week, the nerve damage started just really getting worse and worse. I don't still to this day understand a lot of this. Even though I was struck on the left side, the right side of my body has more damage. My right leg, it would go numb. It would feel like water was draining. You know, obviously, I mean, it could happen just periodically. It would just feel like my leg got wet. I get what I call, and I still get this today, what I refer to as bone burning. It can happen for 30 seconds. It can happen for an hour. It can happen for, you know, 3 minutes. There's no rhyme or reason, and there's no particular part of my body. It can happen anywhere.
And it's been near 8 years now.
It has been. And to someone who doesn't really truly know me, it can look fake because I can be absolutely fine. And then all of a sudden I develop a limp because my foot is hurting so bad that I can't walk on it. And then it can be fine again in a minute. It's very frustrating. I do have brain damage in both frontal lobes. That has unfortunately affected my personality, which has affected a lot of my relationships.
How's it affected your personality?
I'm very flatlined now. I don't show a lot of emotion. I mean, I don't show a lot of happiness. You know, once you've been struck by lightning, you're never the same person. You're a completely different person. You'll never be the same. There's a lot of things that I know I still can't do. There's a lot of things that I continue to do or I continue to improve on, but it's a struggle. you know, my relationship with my kids, they notice the difference. The people that knew me beforehand, they really see a difference in the person that I am now. And a lot of those relationships I have not maintained due to that.
So in the near 8 years since this happened, what's it like for you now when you hear a storm coming?
Immediate panic. First, I pay a lot of attention to my phone to find out when a storm is happening, because if one's happening, I will stay home if I can. All the curtains in my house are blackout curtains, so my house is a lot darker now than it was, because if a storm comes, I don't want any flashes coming through my house. Unfortunately, I live by Fort Bragg, where we have, you know, the explosions going on all the time, and it sounds like thunder, and I hear them from my house, I hear them from my work. I know it's not a fear that I should have, but I do. And sometimes I feel silly that I have it, but I can't stop myself from experiencing. It's crippling at times. If I'm really, like, if I get caught out in it, you know, I go into a shell. There's so many things that have happened. Every home that I've ever lived in has been struck. Yeah, I've been home when that's happened. You know, it's taken out half the, you know, certain parts of my house, all the, you know, all the appliances on certain parts of the house. You know, I had it one time where it took out the modem.
And this is after?
This is after, yes, ma'am. It's almost like it's out there to get me.
What do you make of that? What do you make of the fact that this happened to you? I mean, in a big picture sense, what do you make of the fact that it seems to follow you or feels that way? What in the world do you make of it?
I look at it, and the one thing I always wanted was to be able to understand my students better. I'm a special ed teacher. I now have processing problems. I had to learn to reread after I was struck. My memory, I couldn't remember my student's name immediately afterwards. I would have conversations and I didn't know I had them, but I understand my students so much more. I teach mild mental delay and autism, or students with autism. I understand them. I can explain them to their parents. I know how it feels to be able to hear something and not understand what you heard. And then maybe it connects a second later, or to read something and have no clue, even though you've read it, what it said. New information was very hard to process. And personally, I think it's made me a better teacher. So if there's any positive thing that came out of it, I think that would be it.
So you go through a long time of relearning yourself and not getting the help that you really desperately need from the medical community. You feel isolated. You feel like people don't necessarily believe you when you're experiencing symptoms, which is another thing on top of the pain you're having. And then you...
That's to include close family. It's not just strangers, close family. They're like, oh, you know, that was so long ago. Why are you still having problems? I don't understand it. I don't get it. You know, I think, you know, you're just trying to get attention.
I'm sorry.
It's been tough.
You don't deserve that. I think sometimes lightning strikes are sort of mentioned as a fluke or as the butt of a joke or as a saying, but people often don't really think about what this could do to someone. So for the everyday person who hasn't given this much thought, what do you wish that they would shift in their brain when they consider someone getting struck by lightning?
I think the most important thing is to understand that the effects of a lightning strike, it's not just what happens the first day after, the second day after, you know, the week after. This is a lifelong thing that will happen. You physically get rewired. There's so much power that's gone through your body. Your body will never be the same. And, you know, the comments of, oh my gosh, it's been so long ago. You know, I don't see how that could still be affecting you. They hurt. Part of the problem is it's an invisible disability. If you look at me, you can't see that something's wrong with me. You know, I get stuck sometimes trying to find a word. I've learned how to compensate very well, but there are still things that I still can't do. And, you know, when people don't believe it, or, you know, they just kind of
Like minimize it?
Yeah, it's a minimize. And they don't understand how it rules everything. It rules me walking outside tonight. It rules having my windows open at my home. It rules watching a TV show and lightning comes down and I'm just paralyzed when that happens. There's commercials with lightning that comes down. It's everything. It's everywhere. You know, it's someone's camera flash going off and you didn't expect it. It's a fluorescent light flashing above your head. It's so many things that can just spark it. Hearing a car backfire, you know, something really loud. It's the sound. It's the
fireworks.
For me, no, not fireworks, because unless they're in the distance. Like if I'm at a firework place and I know what that is, it's the unknown when it happens and you're not expecting it. It's just frustrating that people don't understand that, you know, this is major. I'll never be the same person.
Do you wish that this hadn't happened to you?
Yes and no. If it hadn't happened, I would be the same person I was. But because of the experience, I met some absolutely amazing people. And I'm now in the position to help others that go through this. And it's now more education and assisting others. This is definitely something that very few can do. You know, it's a group you never want to be in, but you thank God they're there.
You'd mentioned God before, which is why I'll ask. Do you think this was part of the plan for you?
I always wonder, you know, they always say God will never give you more than you can handle. And I don't know who he thinks I am, but I guess I've made it through it and I'm doing okay at this part. But I keep saying I can't take any more. I'm done. And I'm scared there's going to be something else around the corner. Is it part of his plan? I think we all have choices. And my choice to go in that building and lean instead of just stand, I was the only one leaning on that door. So I made the choice. I don't think it was his plan for it to happen, but I think he's given me the ability to be able to handle what's happened and make the best of it. There's always something positive we can do with our life. It will get better. There's always bad days. There's always good days. There's days where we can't get out of bed because we hurt so bad. But there's always something positive that may happen tomorrow or may happen the next day. Even when we're hurting the worst and it's absolutely just miserable just to move, something tomorrow might be better. There's always something to live for.
Shauna Turner, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you for asking me too.
Shauna joined me from a home in Fayetteville, North Carolina, where she lives with her service dog, Bolt. She's found a lot of help and community in the group Lightning Strike and Electric Shock Survivors International. We'll have a link to it at ctpublic.org/audacious. After the break, meet a man who went from focusing on his career as a surgeon to becoming obsessed with composing music about his experience being struck by lightning. That's what you're hearing right now. I'm Kyone Wolf. This is Audacious. Be right back. This is Audacious. I'm Kyone Wolf. If you went back in time 29 years ago and asked Tony Sicoria about the last time he thought about playing the piano, he'd tell you it was when he was 7 years old. And he'd probably smile, too, as he told you how wholeheartedly he quit the lessons his mom made him take. 29 years ago, he was not passionate about classical music. He was not plagued with existential questions about the afterlife. He was mainly focused on his very busy career as an orthopedic surgeon. but after he was struck by lightning one August day in 1994, everything changed. He was grilling at a family picnic in Athens, New York, when he went to a payphone to check up on his mom. He was just about to hang up the phone.
And all of a sudden, I hear this huge crack. And this big flash of light comes out of the phone and hits me in the face. And it threw me back like a rag doll. As I'm going backwards, I had the sensation of moving forwards. And I was just totally confused. And I'm standing there. And I'm right at the bottom of the stairs of this pavilion that we're at. And I'm looking up in front of me and I see myself on the ground. And I remember thinking in my usual colloquial manner, oh, I'm dead. I'm looking at myself and I'm looking at everybody else. And I call out, but nobody can hear me. And then there was somebody who was waiting to use the phone. Turns out it was a nurse from one of the local hospitals. How fortuitous is that? As I see her, she starts to get down and do CPR. And I'm thinking, you know, this is really kind of crazy, but my mind is racing like crazy at trying to process this. And then all of a sudden I realize I'm thinking just like I normally would. And it came to me that, okay, whoever I am, I always am. This thing that's on the ground is nothing more than a shell, and that's all there is to it. And so at that point, I thought, well, there's no point in standing here like an idiot. So I decided I would go up and check on my family, who was up on the second floor. And so I walk over to the stairs, and I start going up the stairs. And as I'm looking down, so I don't trip, which I would customarily do, I see that my legs are starting to dissolve. And I'm thinking, oh, this is getting kind of crazy. And by the time I got to the top of the stairs, I had lost all form. And I was just this ball of energy. And the stairs go up to the left. And I said, well, the hell, there's no point in that. I just went through the wall. And when I came out the other side of the wall, I passed right over the top of my wife, who was sitting on a chair painting children's faces. I went through the roof, and that's when things really got kind of crazy, because it's like I had suddenly fallen into a river of pure positive energy. You know, there was this bright bluish white light, and the closest thing I could imagine it to was being in a crystal clear stream when I was a kid. The only thing that you could feel was love, pure positive love and peace. There wasn't anything else. So my science brain is starting to kick in and it's going, so, you know, what is this stuff? And I'm looking around and the things that I look at, I can see that this energy is actually running through everything and makes up everything. And suddenly I realized that, Jesus, whatever this is the God energy. And I thought, I can measure this. It's that strong. And, you know, it's just magical thinking. But I was looking at some trees and stuff that were next to the pavilion, and I could see this energy and the actual energy waveform. It looked like a sine wave. It was not a very rapid frequency to the wave, but I could see it. You know, I'm thinking this is really getting kind of crazy, even more so. But then it started taking me someplace, and I could feel that. I was moving, you know, it had speed and direction. I didn't know, have no idea where I was going. And I didn't care much. It wasn't getting hot. So I thought, well, it's got to be a good thing. And I was starting to get excited about being in this. And at that point, I saw like a collage of my life. It was just high points, low points, just flashes or pictures and nothing much else. And it didn't go into any great detail.
How did it feel to see those flashpoints? What kind of feelings did you get?
There were some associated symptoms of either sadness or happiness, and that was about it.
Did it seem like a random collection of images, or were they meaningful, like the day you had your first kid, or you got married, or you took your first steps?
They were more meaningful. They were things that stuck out in my mind somewhere, as things that meant something. And after that was over, then it was, I was going someplace and I just kind of sat back and said, okay, let's go. And I was excited. And then all of a sudden, it's like somebody flipped a switch and I was back in my body and I was so pissed. I was like, I don't want to be back. Please don't make me do this. You go from absolute bliss to pain. I mean, this thing where the lightning hit me in the face and then came out my foot, I had burns. And I thought, Jesus, I don't make me come back and go through this. But, you know, it's real, you realize very quickly that it's not your choice.
What changes did you notice first?
All of a sudden, I just became incredibly desirous of hearing classical piano music. That was a real departure for me because I was a kid of the 60s. It was rock and roll, and there really wasn't much of anything else. It was foreign, but it was very powerful, and it was so much so that I thought, I have to go to a music store and get some classical piano music. I went into the store, and as I'm walking in, there's CD just jumped off the shelf into my hands, and it was Vladimir Ashkenazy playing his favorite Chopin. And I thought, okay, you know, I'm just kind of following the leads or the bread trail, as they say. And I bought the CD and I started to listen to it, and I was absolutely possessed. I listened to it nonstop, and I made everybody else listen to it. I took it to work with me. I think everybody was sick of hearing me. And I said to myself, okay, I need to learn how to play piano. But we didn't have a piano, and I didn't know how to play it. So it brought some challenges. And what was interesting is the next day after that realization, one of our babysitters came and said, look, I'm going to move, but I've got this piano that I love. It's an old upright, and I just need some place to store it for a year. And I thought, okay, here we go. So suddenly there's a piano, and I went to a store and I bought some book on how to teach yourself. When I was 7 years old, my mother had made me take piano lessons for a year, and out of bodily threat, I complied. But then decided that that wasn't anything I wanted to do and dropped it. So I didn't remember any of it at that point. And so I was starting over from ground zero.
You said that you were drawn to this music. You were drawn to the store. You were drawn to that CD. The day after that you realized that you wanted to learn the piano is when your babysitter said, I'm moving and I have this piano. Like, what's going through your head in terms of you're a logical, scientific, medically based person being confronted with all of these new instinctual, impossible to really understand right now information? What are you thinking about all this stuff?
You know, at this point, I'm totally confused. I'm searching for answers wildly. I'm finding every book I can find on people who've been struck by lightning and you know, what happened to them. And, you know, at the time, this is 1994, then there's not a lot of information out there. And it's not something to talk about openly because people are going to think you're a crackpot. And in medicine, it was even worse. I mean, I couldn't even tell some of my colleagues because at the time that somebody would call the state and say, this guy is dangerous. You need to pull his license. And that kind of stuff happened. So I'm a little timid about saying anything to anybody. And I don't know what in the world I was thinking, but I order all this piano music from the CD. And of course, I didn't have the faintest idea. Couldn't read it, couldn't play it, but I was undaunted. I was possessed by it. And one of the things that was that added more craziness to it was about 3 to 4 weeks after the lightning event, I have a dream. I'm walking out onto a stage and I'm at the very back of the stage, and at the very front of the stage, I'm playing in a concert hall. And I'm walking up behind myself, and I'm going, this is not somebody else's music. This is mine. And I thought, holy mackerel. And I stand behind myself, and I'm listening to what I'm playing and making mental notes about it. And then the ending has this kind of loud crashing ending, and it woke me up. From that point on, whenever I sat down at the piano, the music from the dream would start playing. It was almost like a little two-year-old who's very insistent. It's like, pay attention to me, Dad. And if I didn't, it became more insistent. It would become intrusive. You know, would start playing in my head when I was trying to do my work or trying to do surgery. And I'm like, I can't have this. But, you know, it didn't seem to matter. It was going to have its way. And it continued. I would write down little couple of measures of something that I heard, and I threw it in a drawer because I didn't have any idea what to do with it or how to write it.
So you get a piano teacher and you really start investing in learning. You went to a piano camp for adults to learn. What happened after that?
So at the beginning of 2006, I had been going to see a psychic medium for, you know, right after the lightning, and I was struggling to find out, you know, what did it mean? What was supposed to happen with all of this? And she started laughing. And I said, I don't think this is a bit funny. And she was like, oh, I'm sorry. She said, I'm not laughing at you. Your guides are laughing at you. And I said, well, what the hell do they think is so funny? And she says, they said that that's what it took to get your attention. I said, you couldn't think of anything more creative? You had to hit me with a 2x4?
Made of lightning?
Yeah, Jesus. And she says, well, that's what they're saying it took. I was like, okay.
But to get your attention to do what? Become a pianist?
They didn't define what they wanted my attention to be on. Only that we have always been whoever we are. And there's no such thing as death. It's a phase change. You're going from one state of energy to a different state. But you're still the same person. You still think the same way. The process is one of spiritual evolution. You're trying to be able to join the source again from whence you came. But you don't just get to do that for free. And you have to earn enough points, so to speak, to be worthy of that. And so that's what we're all doing here. And that no one should be afraid of death. There is something in the music that I don't understand. And I think that there is somehow frequencies that are causing brain changes.
So you write this beautiful piece of work, the Lightning Sonata, but apparently...
Yeah, you can't call it that. You know, from a musical technician's standpoint, it's a fantasy. Because it doesn't follow the laws of sonatas.
So its full name is Opus 1 Lightning Sonata.
Yep, you got it.
So you practice this, you perform it in front of a giant audience. 3 news stations from other countries are there. Hundreds of people in the audience, yeah?
Packed.
So for what? What do you make of this?
I've asked myself that 1,000 times. And truly, I believe that there's more in the music than I have any idea of, or that anyone else does either.
When you are playing the Lightning Sonata, what are you feeling? What are you experiencing?
It's very close to the way I felt when I was out of my body. You know, I play it all the time because it helps to center me. You know, I've had enough people that have heard the music and people, you know, have visions. They can feel things that they don't normally feel. You know, they're transported to different places. It's amazing the different responses that I've gotten from people. And one time, I guess it was 2013, I was a keynote speaker at what's called the IANDS conference. It's an International Association of Near-Death Studies. And right after the talk, I gave a concert. Afterwards, one of the people came up to me who was taking pictures. And she says, "You have got to see this." And so she pulls up her camera, with a digital camera, and there's a big blue orb over my head and gave off a blue light, which was crazy. I mean, it wasn't a reflection of something. It was giving off its own energy. When I saw it, I was overcome. I didn't have any idea what it meant. It's very clear to me that this whole process has been guided, and no one will come out and tell me. I feel like I'm in a board game and there's no directions. And somehow you have to find your way through the board. But whoever's driving the ship knows where the ship is going.
So now, when there's a storm coming in, what's that like for you?
I have a very healthy respect for anything that has to do with lightning. I mean, I've seen what it can do. I've taken care of people who've been hit. And, you know, I was one of the lucky ones. It turned my life upside down, but I'm still walking. I'm not dragging one leg, and I can still function. So,
I like that it brought us together, Tony.
Absolutely. For a reason. As Einstein said, God doesn't throw dice. You know, I try to follow the bread trail, and hopefully it's going to lead me to where I'm supposed to be and do what I'm supposed to do. And I guess the only fear that I've always had is that when I finally figure it out, I'm going to yank my ass out of here so fast to make your head swim. It's like, all right, get him out of there.
He passed. He passed. He passed. He passed away. No, he passed.
Yeah.
Well, Tony Sicoria, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much. It's an honor for me.
After our conversation, Tony was kind enough to send a few copies of his CD to our station. So, of course, I gave one to Audacious producer Jessica Severin DiMartinez, and she gave it to her 7-year-old daughter, Victoria, who doesn't know anything about the story behind this music. After noticing that she listened to it daily for 10 days... Jessica asked her how she felt about the music.
It makes me feel happy. I really like it. It's like, I love it. It's like the feeling of my voice when I talk. I like it.
When do you listen to it?
I listen to it at the night because it makes me feel happy when I listen to CDs. And my favorite one now has turned into this one.
And what does it make you feel when you listen?
It makes me feel like as if I'm sleeping, but I can still hear it. And it makes me feel like so happy. I wish I could stay awake and just listen to it forever.
Audacious is always lovingly produced by me, Khalil Rahman, Jessica Severin DiMartinez, Meg Fitzgerald, Meg Dalton, and Katie Talarski at Connecticut Public Radio in Hartford, with help from our interns, Elizabeth Van Arnhem and Melody Rivera. Subscribe to Audacious wherever you get your podcasts, and you can see the pictures of the orb visiting Tony at his piano at ctpublic.org/audacious. You can send me all of your thoughts on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Kyone Wolf, or email audacious@ctpublic.org. Thanks for listening.